Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Hobo Thinga podcast. My name is Crystal Cedino, and I am the Training and Development Manager for the Native Learning Center. Thrilled that all of you are rejoining us for another episode this week. Today, my co-host, Ms. Coralise Anthony. Go ahead and say hi, Cora.
Hi, everybody. I'm the Training and Development Specialist here at the Native Learning Center.
Yes. So with that, today we're going to be discussing green energy and its impact and benefits in Native communities with our very special guest who we're very excited to have on today, Ms. Angelina Benson-Glanz, who's the Director of New Market Initiative at Elevate Energy. Go ahead and say hi.
Hi, I'm so excited to be here with you today, and I can't wait to dig in and talk about this topic.
And I believe what's interesting is Cora was the one who found you through a webinar, Cora, or some training or something like that?
It was a summit, yeah.
Summit, yeah. So I'm so happy that she attended the summit. I'm so happy that she found you. We're very excited. So, all right. Well, with that, so let's go ahead and dive in. Yeah, let's jump in. Let's talk about more of your work with Elevate.
Wonderful. Thank you. Yeah. So at Elevate, we have a vision that everyone has access to clean and affordable heat, power, and water in their homes, no matter who they are or where they live. So in order to realize that vision, equity must be at the center of every conversation and every program. So that's where we really focus. We're a 20-year-old organization that we work nationally across the country, but we have a really large presence in the Midwest. We really focus on designing and delivering a variety of programs, but these programs are focused in historically disinvested communities. And so the programs we work on, we work with homeowners, multifamily building owners, nonprofits, community organizations, municipalities, you name it, on the areas of energy and water efficiency, clean energy, workforce development, and also healthy homes. So those are some of the big areas that are super, super important to us. We're just really passionate because in order to address climate change, we have to make sure that the communities that have been left behind in the past are actually the first to really receive the benefits and transition to a clean energy future.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think very easy for me to say that we know that Indian country is definitely one of those communities that are definitely left behind. And if you're not at the table, then you're not at the table and you get left behind. So, and definitely many other communities as well. So, but yeah, so with that being said, let's go ahead and dive in a little bit deeper. Can you explain to our listeners what energy efficiency is as well as clean energy?
Energy efficiency is, simply put, it means using less energy to perform the same task or function. So this means that you could have energy efficient equipment or fixtures such as LED lighting, high efficiency furnaces, hot water heaters, you name it. It also means that our homes and our buildings can be energy efficient. That means they not only have that high efficient equipment, but they also are well insulated, taking into a lot of other sustainable building practices too. Really, clean energy is really around electricity, or particularly electricity that is not generated from fossil fuel burning sources. It does not generate greenhouse gas emissions, which is kind of a, you know, it's a little bit of a big word. What is that? But it's essentially all the gases that are emitted when we burn natural gas and propane and all those things, and it's causing climate change. Who's acutely feeling the impacts of climate change? Those historically disinvested communities, right? You know, when we think about why is this really important? Why is it important for our homes to be energy efficient, our buildings, our schools, our workplaces? It's really about how do we transition away from those fossil fuel burning sources? How do we use less energy? And there's so much more that is really important there because, you know, we could really go into the benefits of energy efficiency and clean energy. I don't know if you want to jump into that as well. I'm happy to talk about that. Yeah,
okay. Absolutely. Yeah, that was going to be my next question. Why is this important and how do we become more energy efficient?
I love starting with a why. Why is it important? If we use less energy in our homes, we're burning less fossil fuels to heat and power our homes. Energy efficiency is kind of the foundation in my line of work, at least. And then when you are able to layer on clean energy and utilize renewable energy sources that are coming from the sun or, you know, wind, all of these things, that we are then further reducing our fossil fuel burning electricity and heat. All of this is really important though, especially in Indian country, because at the household level, the utility burden on families, so the amount of money they're paying every month for the utility bills is really high. When we look at where a lot of communities are located, looking at the upper Midwest, upper plains, Rocky Mountain states, then we jump down to the Southwest. So what's the connection between all that? It costs a lot of money to heat homes in the winter in these cold climates and to cool homes in the summer in the hot climates. And so when we think about those energy bills and think about the opportunity to save even $20, maybe $50 a month, we think about what else families can do with that money. It's just so real, right? You know, we think about childcare costs, medicine, food, you name it. So energy efficiency is so critically important. And then, of course, if there's opportunities to layer on solar panels to also be even more, you know, utilize renewables, we can lower those costs even more.
I was going to ask, because it's funny you mentioned solar panels, because when I hear these terms, that's what I think of. And I'm like, but sometimes it's expensive to install, people don't have access to them and whatnot. What would you say are some basic steps that our communities can start at the house level to start making that transition?
I think installing LED light bulbs, it's something that's super easy, you know, because I think we use lights, right? Especially in the winter when it's dark, you know, so LED lights, very easy. I think, you know, not acknowledging there is a cost to them, that's definitely a first step. I think the other thing is, if there's opportunities to make upgrades to, whether it's a furnace or an air conditioner, there's more efficient systems out there that are really important to be able to install. And, you know, you will find that in some cases there are rebates from utility companies, rebates from manufacturers to help bring down the cost. There is a cost, though. I definitely do acknowledge it. You know, I think we're hoping that there will be more funding flowing into communities to cover these costs. You mentioned solar panels, and solar panels can be costly. There's different funding mechanisms. So you can essentially have them installed and somebody else owns them and maintains them. You know, so that's something that's, you know, worth considering if those options are available in your communities. But there are a lot of steps, but the first step I would definitely say, change out your lights.
That's awesome. Yeah, no, I remember the first time actually that I actually saw like windmills. Like I was like, oh my gosh, this is so strange. I was in, it wasn't even here in the US. It was actually, I went to visit family in Denmark and we were, they lived in the country, my aunt and uncle, they lived in the country. And I just remember being on like their highway and looking to my right. And I was like, Oh wow, you guys have wind power over here. And they're like, yeah, this is like normal. And I feel like, you know, I don't know if I'm wrong in saying this, but I kind of feel like the US is a little behind in that, you know, area. So it was definitely like, wow. And then they're just like, it's no big deal.
There's a lot of room for improvement. I would say one of the coolest things is in the Midwest, particularly I found when I was driving through Iowa, you would see a truck basically going down the street with one of the blades for the wind turbines. These things are huge. It's like, wow, you never, when you see it like operating, you never think it's that big. And it is. Yeah, there's a lot of opportunity for us to install more renewable energy around the US.
I agree with you. I actually used to live out in El Paso and I would see the trucks driving those past every day and they are humongous. But with that being said, we're talking about just how can we improve our homes? Can you talk to us a little bit about what needs and opportunities our communities or families can have for proper indoor air quality and why is this important in Indian country?
Indoor air quality is one of those things that's so critically important and often overlooked. And I was listening to one of your previous podcasts around healthy homes and I was like, oh, this is so amazing. And I'm probably just going to repeat some of it. So definitely encourage your listeners to go back and listen to that one if they want to go in depth on healthy homes and indoor air quality. Just a real quick, indoor air quality, what are we even talking about here? You know, and I think one of the most tangible things for me to think about is when you're cooking. If you're cooking on a gas or wood burning stove, actually burning that basically that fossil fuel, right? Like burning is emitting particles into your air. And it's something that we don't think about often. Some of us have those things over our range, i.e. it should be an exhaust fan, but it usually doesn't work or it doesn't work properly. And so you can turn that on, but it's if you have it, please do turn it on, but it's often insufficient. And so I think that when we talk about indoor air quality, it's really thinking about what are those unhealthy particles that are floating around our home and what are they doing to us? And this is particularly important because indoor air quality, unhealthy indoor air quality can really trigger asthma. And asthma is a big problem around the country. It's a problem in communities that have been historically disinvested. It's a problem in Indian country. You know, children, I was just looking up some quick stats in preparation, and children in Indian country are experiencing asthma at twice the rate of non-Hispanic white children. And that was a 2018 statistics from the Department of Health and Human Services. And I was like, okay. So when we think about indoor air quality, let's think about what are those asthma triggers. Obviously, when we're cooking, another one is mold and mildew, which you guys went deep in your healthy homes. I was listening to that and I was getting nervous myself. I have little children. But, you know, when we think about moisture, honestly, moisture getting into our homes, it's sometimes coming in from the outside. So in communities that are close to lakes or suffer from flooding, that water, that moisture is getting in from the outside, breeding mildew and mold. And then the other place where it's coming from is when we take showers. You know, oftentimes there's bathroom exhaust. Oftentimes there's not bathroom exhaust. They may or may not work. We may or may not turn them on. And so all that moisture from the shower is staying. And that is another kind of culprit that is generating mold and mildew. And we just don't want those mold spores to get into our lungs, especially the lungs of young kids. So that's the situation. And so what can people do about that? You know, it's not all doom and gloom here, right? You know, I think the first thing is if you do have ventilation in your home, so in your kitchen and your bathroom, please turn it on. Turn it on while you're cooking. Turn it on while you're taking that shower. Encourage everyone living in the home to utilize it. And then the other thing is just thinking about if you have access to HEPA air filters to constantly be cleaning the air in your home. That's another opportunity. I live in California. We are heavily impacted by wildfires. Again, I mentioned I have young children, so I actually bought HEPA filters for everyone's bedroom because it's, again, just not particles we want to get into the air. So when you think about it, just a HEPA filter, even if you're not close to fires, it's good to clean the air. Also, and thinking about if you're using green cleaning supplies, you know, back in the day, everybody used bleach for everything. Bleach emits fumes. We don't want those getting into lungs either. So really thinking about what your cleaning supplies are. And then, of course, if you have moisture issues, addressing them. That's another big thing that we can do. And that may mean adding moisture barriers. First of all, if there's water, get it out. And if there's other ways to install ventilation or use moisture barriers, please do. So, things that people can do.
Absolutely. It's funny that you mentioned the bleach because I come from a Hispanic household. So does Cora. And I.
Me too. Bleach everything.
Yeah, I just remember the weekends my mom would wake up at like the crack of dawn and she'd be in the bathroom, that poor woman, just bleach everywhere. And then, you know, and that's what I grew up like, you know, learning to do. And then, you know, and then I realized, like, especially if you do it, and this sounds awful, but like, I remember as a kid having done it without realizing that I closed the bathroom door. So then you have bleach everywhere and you're literally inhaling all of that. And I remember at one point I was like, because I was bent down, you know, scrubbing the tub or whatnot. And then I stood up really fast and then I was like, whoa. Exactly. And my mom, she comes swinging in and she's like, what are you doing? door closed. You're gonna end up passing out. She's like, be careful. And then after that, I was like, doors open if I'm using bleach. Or use them. I know there's like a vinegar is really good, or like there was a mixture of vinegar. So try and, yeah, I definitely am gonna recommend you use those maybe more natural products. I understand sometimes where bleach can be called for, but be careful.
No, it is so on point. And I think I find that I have to resist the urge to try and to bleach things, right? Like, I'm like, oh, my floor is dirty, let me bleach it. I'm like, no. Let me see if there's a better approach to this. Like every day, this is something that comes up. I'm like, bleach it? No. Let me find the better way. And I'm a huge fan of the water vinegar mix, I think it is. It's just, it cleans everything, actually. It's actually great.
It's funny that you guys mentioned that, because this past weekend, we're in South Florida, so it's very humid and whatnot. And so as I'm cleaning the whole house, I see my daughter's bedroom. Her window had like a little like mildew spot but on the outside, right? So I was like, oh my God, thank you. But me, I took out the whole window. I'm like spraying it down. I'm cleaning it. Like, I saw the tiniest spot and like panic came in my body. And then I called my mother, and her first recommendation was bleach. I was like, no, I'm trying to move away from that. But going back to like air quality and whatnot, even just making sure that there's natural airflow in your house. So she's like, just open up those windows at least once a day, turn on your fans, make sure that the air is flowing to take out all of that humidity, to make sure because our windows here, we put our houses so cold at night and it's hot outside, they start to sweat. So So make sure that they dry out. So it's something as simple as just make sure that you have that natural airflow if you don't have the exhaust fans or whatnot in your home. And I'm telling you, ever since the weekend, I've been just like every day, open window, turn on fans. I went out and bought a new one. Just wanted to put in that little tidbit.
Yeah, no, the natural airflow, it's so critical. I mean, again, I live in California, in a place where we don't have ventilation. We don't even have air conditioning. I'm in the Bay Area. And so that natural airflow is so critical. And again, you know, when I was mentioning, like when you cook and like just getting those smells out, like with indoor air quality, I always think if you're smelling something, what else is in the air, right? With the bleach, right? You smell the bleach. And then all of a sudden you have that lightheaded feeling and you're like, whoa, if this is happening, like what else is it doing? Please, airflow. So if it can be natural, wonderful. If it has to be mechanical and coming from ventilation, good too.
It's just so interesting because like, I remember when my mom was cooking as a kid, she'd always open up the windows in the kitchen and whatnot. And I was always like, why are you doing that? Like, you're letting the AC out, mom. And then she goes, you have to let things leave like naturally and whatnot. And I was just like, all right, whatever. And then now anytime I do cook, guess what? That's what I'm doing. Yeah, it's amazing. She did something right, I guess.
it's amazing what our elders actually know, you know, and what they've been doing for generations. And obviously there's some room for improvement, like with the bleach thing, but they also have figured out a lot of very natural ways to get rid of those healthy indoor air particles.
I just think it's just really funny, like that connection that we sometimes don't make between like the reason why we do things and like, you know, the health benefits behind it and whatnot. Like, you know, as a kid, I'm like, what is she doing? She's letting AC out. And then, you know, you realize like long term, like, oh, no. We're actually doing this for our health. So people think about these things. So. All right. Well, let's go ahead and dive into some workforce development here and opportunities for communities around energy efficiency. Can you expand on that?
You know, I think this is something that we're really, especially with, you know, just more dollars flowing from the federal government, we're really looking at and hoping even for more opportunities. But one thing that's really neat and interesting about energy efficiency and clean energy is that we need people to install the equipment. We need people to put those solar panels up, right? Inherently, by shifting more towards an energy efficient and clean energy future, jobs are created. And we really, you know, at Elevate, we really focus on making sure that Black and Brown communities, and this is also true of Indigenous communities, that those jobs are created locally. And so we got to make sure that we get the training to the individuals who are interested in these fields. So that's what, when we talk about workforce development, I think that there's like a natural opportunity for job creation. One thing that's interesting is it's not, you know, sometimes people think, oh, you just put up the panels and walk away. You know, these systems have to be maintained. And so these are longer term jobs. And if these are jobs that are created locally, that's so much better. And so it's so that's what, when we think about workforce development, we're thinking about it's not only getting the individual trained, it's then having that individual build a business. So it's actually about building that small business. And then that individual goes from a one person shop to having several trucks. And then what is that building? It's building wealth. It's building wealth for the community, which that's what I get excited about, because how can we actually build that local wealth? And so all this to say, you know, there's funding flowing. We think there's going to be even more. We hope there's going to be even more around workforce development related to clean energy. And so it's just an opportunity that we're seeing, and it's a need. And I think that it when we think about, you know, again, how does this relate to self-sufficiency? So if we're putting up solar panels, and then my dream is also pairing that with battery storage, which we haven't talked much about, but and we're making our homes and buildings energy efficient, this whole ecosystem that we're creating then is creating jobs, it's creating wealth, it's leading to not only potentially energy independence if we have, you know, renewable energy systems in communities, but then it's also just bringing in that wealth generating component. So just a little bit of something that I get excited about on the workforce development side that folks don't often think about. They're like, oh, I'm just being energy efficient. And it's like, yeah, that's great. And like, but there's this larger thing that's created.
You're making jobs. You're building on maybe a micro economy and, you know, so on and so forth. So yeah, definitely. Hire, employ your own people, support your communities, you know, all of that. I think all that's just so important, especially in Indian country where, you know, like I mentioned earlier, like if you're not sitting at the table, you're not being heard. So
it's all about, like, one thing that we often talk about, communities that have historically been disinvested. But one thing that is really critical and kind of another part of my role at Elevate is working with community-based organizations to take their, you know, as they have ideas, how can we get them prepared for the federal funding that's going to be flowing. So Cora, this is when you originally heard me speak, I was talking about the Justice 40 initiative and Justice 40 Accelerator, which is a program that Elevate's working on in partnership with several other nonprofit organizations to help community-based organizations get ready for funding to more, even more funding to flow. Because historically, again, what you were saying, Crystal, historically, if you're not at the table, you're not getting access to this funding. And so how can we prepare community organizations to get ready to access that funding? There's so many steps involved. It's such a daunting process. And, you know, but it's so critical because at the end of the day, the communities have the solutions and like the communities know what they need. And so, yes, communities have been historically disinvested, but communities do have such a rich fabric of community, quite frankly, right? And so how can we further support the ideas that are being generated at the community level and bringing folks to the table and bringing folks to be able to access funding to build back their communities, you know, and build upon what's really already there?
And this is what's, I guess, even cooler about our program. So, you know, you're talking about all these steps to get there and whatnot. That's why the Native Learning Center exists. We're here to kind of like be that stepping stone to get you there. You know, we do this fiscal year, what's coming up is like grant writing workshops, grants management workshops, strategic planning workshops. Like, you know, we're trying to like give those tools so that you can move in that direction and, you know, and further help your community and contribute and whatnot. So I think that's what's, I love when, like, you know, the smaller, like, bits of information, you're like, how does this even really apply? That right there, exactly what you said, just being able, like, our program does that connecting the dot kind of, you know, situation, I guess, where, you know, you can actually do it. Because like you said, they're there. The resources are there. Like, there is funding. There is, you know, there is all of it. You just have to know how. And I feel like that's always the biggest, you know, issue. Like, how do I do it? Like, I don't know how to do it.
Yeah, how do you do it? Because there's so many steps. Because let's be honest, it's been made to be convoluted for a reason. So let's name it. And your website has such rich information. I just spent so much time going through it. It's just what an amazing resource, because you do have just information on grants.gov. Like, that's like a whole nother podcast. We could just go in for it. I love it. You guys are really doing wonderful, wonderful work. And that's exactly, we want to make sure that information gets out there to all communities. So you're already doing it. I love it.
Thank you so much.
I was going to say, it's besides workforce, it's also, I would say, I would rather have a member of my community come into my own home to that knows like our traditions and whatnot. So if any of those projects, I'm planning on implementing them, I would rather have someone I know, I trust, that understands my culture, understands my background, understands me, come and work with me than have a stranger come in and do those work. So I think that's also a very important part of what you said, creating, and what Crystal said, creating this little microeconomy within these indigenous communities and creating those jobs, because then it's someone that understands you that's going to come and help you kind of build on a better home quality and whatnot. So thank you for that.
Yeah, I mean, and just to like build off of that, like at the end of the day, so much of this is built on trust. Do you really trust the person who's coming to install your furnace? First of all, you have to let them into your home, and then you have to believe what they're saying. So isn't that trust? Isn't it wonderful when that trust, I always think of like a grandmother who's letting in a younger person who they saw grow up. And that's the person that is installing their furnace, their air conditioner, their solar panels. Like, there's nothing more beautiful than that, right? And so, yeah, I thank you for making that point.
Yeah. I think, and to go back to what Crystal is, because I take a little longer to process, right? But I think that's why I'm so grateful to be working at the Native Learning Center and everything that we do, because it's information coming from tribes to tribes. And so they know that what we're doing here and these conversations that we're having and whatnot is to further push like their well-being, their self-sufficiency. So it's really awesome that you went in and really liked the work that we're doing here. Like you mentioned, there are a lot of initiatives and things coming out and whatnot. Are there any new and exciting projects coming up that our listeners could benefit from? Any following steps that you recommend for them?
There's a lot of exciting projects happening around the country and things that have already happened. So I think sometimes too, folks tend to think, oh, this is really new, and I'm nervous because it's new. It's like there are solar projects that have been going up for years. And one of my colleagues actually worked with the St. Regis Mohawk tribe on one of their projects, their clean energy projects. And so I wanted to start there of like, this has been happening, you know, and it's a really great project that's been highlighted. And then through our Justice 40 Accelerator work, we're working with several organizations that are continuing to really try to expand clean energy in Indian country. It's absolutely wonderful. And one of them is Honor the Earth in Minnesota. So they're part of our Justice 40 Accelerator. And, you know, they've been doing a lot of work around solar. And then at Elevate, we've been working with one of the nations up in Wisconsin and looking to see, you know, figuring out ways to create net zero homes And so those are just some exciting projects happening around the country that I wanted to really lift up. And then, yeah, of course, coming out of the federal government, we're really looking forward to how much funding is going to be flowing. There's going to be hopefully very specific dollars flowing in into Indian country. So that's really, it's something that I think everyone's paying attention to and should be a really good opportunity. And obviously that's more at the community scale, right? So when we think about individual homeowners or, you know, just members of households that want to take easy steps, you know, we talked about LEDs, but also just kind of continuing to learn a little bit more about what's happening in your local community. Where are there opportunities to think about, you know, energy efficiency, clean energy. Again, going back to something I said at the top of the hour, climate change is real. And those who are being impacted most heavily are the communities we're talking about today, right? I was in a meeting recently and someone said, are the number of greenhouse gas emissions that are reduced going to be tracked? And another person said, climate change, this is even bigger than that, right? This is really about livelihood and survival they were referencing a specific indigenous community. This is not just about GHG, that's our acronym we use, emissions. You know, this is about making sure that for some communities who have to pick up and leave where they have historically been for years and years and years and move to higher ground, or, you know, this is real. So, you know, energy efficiency, clean energy, just a small piece of it, but like ultimately understanding what communities can do to be resilient to this climate future that is coming.
Awesome. Thank you so much for that. Crystal, any final thoughts, questions?
Nope. Just as I mentioned, like the bigger picture, you know, help your communities, try and get that work in, try and think of, you know, opportunities like Angelina mentioned to improve your communities, be part of the bigger picture, because I think we get lost in like, oh, well, this doesn't really matter. And I think at the end of the day, no, it really does. I do think, I don't want to say my motto for life because it's not, but definitely something I truly believe in is that one person can make a difference, because then thought process or that idea can bounce off to another person. And it's kind of just like a domino effect. So if you can help your communities out, try and be as energy efficient and, you know, all of that. Think about your, you know, your livelihood and how we want to improve it, not just for ourselves, but everyone else. So that's it. That's all.
it takes a community.
Yes. Takes a village.
It takes a village. Yeah. It takes a village. That's the phrase. But I always say communities have the answers when collectively, like, communities are thinking about the problems that they're facing. They have the answers. We just want to make sure, and you guys are already doing such a fabulous job of getting the information into communities. And so we just need more dollars to flow. And then we can build these smaller, like, micro economies that we were talking about.
Awesome. So Angelina, thank you again so much for taking the time to sit here with us and have this discussion. That brings us to the end of this episode. So as always, thank you for listening to the Hobotinga podcast. If you guys enjoy our show, please rate it and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. And also visit our website, www.nativelearningcenter.com, to find information on upcoming webinars and virtual trainings. And please be sure to come back for more content.